Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 29. Sarvabhutastam Atmanam. Sarvabhutani Chatmani. Ikshite Yoga Yuktatma. Sarvatra Samadarshanaha. Sarvabhutastam. Situated in all beings. Atmani, the super soul. Sarva, all. Bhutani, entities. Cha, also. Atmani, in the self. Ikshate, does see. Yoga yukta atma, one who is dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. Sarvatra, everywhere. Samradarshanaha, seeing equally. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. True yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Purport. Krishna conscious yogi is the perfect seer because he sees Krishna, the Supreme, situated in everyone's heart as Super Soul, Paramatma. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Rideshe Arjuna Tishtati. The Lord and his Paramatma feature is situated within both the heart of the dog and that of a Brahmana. The perfect yogi knows that the Lord is eternally transcendental and is not materially affected by his presence in either a dog or a brahmana. That is the supreme neutrality of the Lord. The individual soul is also situated in the individual heart, but he is not present in all hearts. That is the distinction between the individual soul and the super soul. One who is not factually in the practice of yoga cannot see so clearly. A Krishna conscious person can see Krishna in the heart of both the believer and the non-believer. In the Smriti, this is confirmed as follows. Atata vachcha matrik vach si atmahi paramohari. The Lord, being the source of all beings, is like the mother and the maintainer. As the mother is neutral to all different kinds of children, the Supreme Father and Mother is also. Consequently, the Super Soul is always in every living being. Outwardly also, every living being is situated in the energy of the Lord. As will be explained in the seventh chapter, the Lord has primarily two energies, the spiritual or superior and the material or inferior. The living entity, although part of the superior energy, is conditioned by the inferior energy. The living entity is always in the Lord's energy. Every living entity is situated in him in one way or another. The yogi sees equally because he sees that all living entities, although in different situations, according to the results of fruit of work, in all circumstances remain servants of God. While in the material energy, the living entity serves the material senses, and while in the spiritual energy, he serves the Supreme Lord directly. In either case, the living entity is the servant of God. This vision of equality is perfect in a person in Krishna consciousness. Sarvabhutastam Atmanam, Sarvabhutini Chatmani, Ikshite Yoga Yuktatma, Sarvatra Samadarshanaha. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Quite simple, actually. Simple for the simple and very difficult for the crooked. That is to understand how everything in the material world is under Krishna's control. So that when Prahlad Maharaj is asked, where is your God? Where did you get your power from? And Prahlad Maharaj could fearlessly tell him that the same person that's giving me my power is also giving you your power. He's giving everyone power. And Haridasa Kaur was being chastised by the Qazi for being a Hindu, then Arya Kaur understood that actually it's the illusory energy who is speaking through the Kazi. So he wasn't disturbed at all because he understood that this is somehow or another Krishna's arrangement, that Krishna has his illusory energy speaking through the Kazi, and therefore he wasn't concerned. And when he went to the prison, and all the prisoners paid him obeisances and respect, and they asked for his blessings, he said, "Let you remain as you are." So they all became very depressed because they were in prison. He was blessing them, "Let them stay as they are." But he had to explain it. Actually, right now you're in the spiritual energy because you're paying respects to a devotee, so let you should stay like that forever. Not that you have to stay in this prison. In any case, whatever the circumstances, we have to have knowledge. And if we don't have knowledge, at least we have to have faith. As Krishna says, Ukramantam sitim vapi, bhujana vagunanvita, vimudo nanapashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body, or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this clearly. So at least we are in a process of training our vision, our knowledge, and generally speaking, everyone else is not doing anything. Maybe they're doing something. Maybe they follow one or two regular principles, but that's just like, you know, pouring elephant bathing. Hasti snana. The elephant bathes very nicely in the river, and then goes onto the land and throws dirt all over his body. So the idea that you can actually follow one or two principles, just like there is groups of people that are against abortion, but they love killing animals and eating them. And other people, they're against animal killing, but they are very proficient at abortion. They don't find any reason not to carry that out. In other words, they say, oh, even they won't even drink milk, saying that actually milk is bad for you, that you're involved in harming animals. You're encouraging animal slaughter when you drink milk. But they have no difficulty killing their children. Cows they want to protect. They're disturbed that the cows are being mistreated, but they don't mind killing their own children. So obviously there's something lacking in their understanding. And now in some countries there's euthanasia. Everyone knows what euthanasia is? It's not youth in China. Euthanasia is when you kill the old people. Mercy killing. It's like in Africa, when their grandfather gets old, and then they decide one day they have a grandfather celebration. So they take the grandfather up to the roof of the house and they roll him off the roof. And then he lands and they check and see if he's alive. And if he's still alive, they take him up to the roof again and roll him off until he's no longer alive. Then they have a feast in the honor of the grandfather and they eat his brains. Because they figured grandfather is very wise, so we eat his brains, we'll also become wise. I didn't make this up, by the way. And nowadays they say we should kill the old people because they're a burden. So if they're not productive, then they should be killed for their own benefit. Otherwise there will be a burden. And all the inheritance that their children would have got is wasted in their medical treatment. So better kill them and give the money to the young people who can properly utilize it. And there are laws in some countries that it's legal to do that. And if it's not a law, then many times the nurses, they inadvertently give them an extra amount of painkiller and then they're finished. The angels of mercy. So Krishna says, itanto yoginas chaiva pashanyatma avashtita itanto yakritatmano naivam pashanti chetasa. The endeavoring transcendentalist who is striving for self-realization can see all this clearly, but those whose eyes are not trained, although they may try, cannot see what's taking place. You can take the best microscope, the best telescope, the best diagnostic equipment, and you'll never understand anything about what's going on. Nothing spiritual, at least, nothing of any ultimate importance. You won't be able to understand the existence of the soul and how the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone, how everyone is simply getting the results of their either their spiritual or their material activities. But everyone is Krishna's, the Upadrasta Navantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatmati Chatyuto Dehismin Purusha Para, that there's another person besides the soul. It probably keeps on pointing it out. It may seem rather repetition, but how much during the day we remember that we're under the control of the super soul? Does anyone here ever forget that? Only me. Oh, a couple others. Yeah, we sometimes forget that the super soul is conducting everything in the material and spiritual universes. Of course, in the spiritual universes, there's no need to direct the souls, they all act spontaneously out of love. But here we're being directed by the laws, either his internal energy or his external energy. So we forget that, and therefore Prabhupada is repeating it, because most of the time there is a class of people called the impersonalists. Even they believe in the soul, something like a soul, they don't believe in the Supreme Soul. And even if they believe in the Supreme Soul, like Sankaracharya said, Narayana Parovyakta, Narayana is above the material energy, but he believes that Narayana is a product of the illusory energy, so it doesn't give him very much credit. From the Brahman, Brahman decided to have an illusory pastime that doesn't exist. Don't worry if that's going on, because it's not really, it's nothing exists. If you think something's existing, it's because you're an illusion. So Brahman supposedly expands itself as Narayan, illusory Narayan. And illusory Narayan creates another illusion called the material universe. And he puts the souls into the illusion who are actually Brahman, everyone's God, but we're thinking we're not God because we're in this pastime of Narayan who thinks he's God, but he's actually an illusion too because only Brahman is God. So if you can't understand that, that's very good. If you think you've understood it, that's very bad. Because as Prabhupada said, that if Narayan is a product of illusion, that makes illusion greater than Narayan. That means, and if we're all God, except for Narayan, that all of us are actually Brahman, and maybe Narayan is also Brahman, but he's one of the Brahmans. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked in to the Brahmin's house to meet with the Mayavadi sannyasis in Banaras, and he sat down in the place where they washed their feet, Prakashananda Saraswati Goswami came over to help him because he thought this sannyasi must be quite depressed. He's sitting in this dirty place. He must have had a bad day. Maybe I can go over and try and cheer him up. But all the Mayavadi sannyasis, they saw that he had an effulgence greater than 10 million suns. Now, if you saw someone with an effulgence greater than 10 million suns, you'd probably get a little impressed. That's pretty good. How did you do that? But they weren't impressed so much because they thought, oh yes, there's Narayan. He's realized he's Narayan, therefore he has an effulgence of 10 million suns, but we're also all Narayan. So it makes no difference, him or us, we're all Narayan. So you have 10 million suns, or just half a sun or a quarter sun, it's all the same, it's all one. So even they meet Narayan, they think Narayan, well, we're also Narayan, you're Narayan, you know, nice meeting myself, pat myself on the back, pat Narayan on the back. So this is called Mayavadi philosophy. But so Prabhupada emphasizes that there is a distinction between the super soul, who is controlling everything, and ourselves, who are simply desiring. And according to our desire, the super soul is reciprocating with us, putting us under the material energy or the spiritual energy. Therefore, one who has that vision, he can see everyone as a soul, and whether they're good or bad or in between, actually they're just, Krishna is arranging these things to fulfill their desire. So if they're in the spiritual energy, they're fortunate. If they're in the material energy, they're just unfortunate. They're just wasting their time. It may appear that they're disturbing others, but no one can really disturb anyone without Krishna's sanction. Sometimes it appears that Krishna is putting his devotees into difficulty, but that's only to set an example of how tolerant they are and how they remain fixed in Krishna consciousness. And in the case of Durvasa Muni, for instance, when Durvasa Muni went to, by the invitation of Duryodhana, went to the Pandavas in the forest. Duryodhana, as we know, was not a very nice person. He was especially when he vanquished the Pandavas after the gambling match. They were vanquished into the forest. Then Duryodhana sent Durvasa Muni into the forest with his 60,000 followers. I never got a final count, but there were a lot of followers. So in one place it said 10,000 followers, but anyhow, that's a good amount also. Into the forest in order to take lunch with the Pandavas. Now, when you're in the forest, obviously you don't bring a big kitchen with you. So Vajrapati had one plate, and as long as she hadn't taken her meal, the plate could feed unlimited guests. Interesting enough, it was given, I believe, by Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni came with his 10,000 followers, and Draupadi, right after Draupadi had taken her meal, and therefore there was nothing. Even to pick 10,000 leaves would have been a struggle. But Yudhisthira Maharaj said to Durvasa Muni and his followers, yes, we'd be glad to feed you. Just take bath in the Ganges, and when you come out, we'll have prasadam ready for you. Maybe you can divide up leaves amongst yourselves. Or no. So they went to bathe in the Ganges, and everyone was in anxiety. How are we going to feed 10,000 followers with Durvasa Muni? Krishna, being omniscient, understood their problem. He came and he asked for some prasadam. And then Draupadi started to cry. She said, first, we can't feed these 10,000 sages and Durvasa Muni. Now Krishna himself comes and wants prasadam. We can't give him anything either. So Krishna said, no, don't worry about it. Just look in the pot, see if there's anything left. So they found a little bit of sabji left in the pot. And he took it, Krishna ate it, and became completely satisfied. And it said the whole material universe was satisfied, so much so that Durvasa Muni and his followers felt themselves completely full, that they couldn't even eat another anything. And rather than disappoint the Pandavas and Draupadi, they fled. They never came and asked for prasadam. That's why Krishna saved the Pandavas due to his omniscience and his all-pervasiveness. So one has to have some confidence that actually Krishna is all-pervasive, that he is omniscient, omnipresent, he is omnipotent, and therefore try to see things in relation to Krishna. And try to go on in Krishna consciousness despite whatever, as it says, friends and enemies, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor. Because ultimately Krishna is behind the whole thing. And if one is Krishna conscious, then one becomes perfect in any circumstance. So everything is just a test to see how much we turn to Krishna and how much we become overwhelmed by our material conceptions and fall victim to illusion and material experience rather than striving for spirit, for taking shelter of Krishna in all activities. Then we can see everyone and appreciate that we should help, try to help everyone, make anyone we can, try to make advance in the Krishna consciousness, because everyone has a great opportunity, but to become Krishna conscious, to get to come back to the perfection of life, or people are just wasting their time in different pursuits. So rather than try to engage people, rather than becoming angry at people or whatever, understand that they have a potential to have a relationship with Krishna, and ultimately it's up to them whether or not they want to take advantage of that, and all we can be is an instrument to assist them. There's nothing else we can actually do. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So I'm wondering, when Yudhishthira received the Rasa Muni, how come he so calmly just diverted them towards the river, and even though he was aware that they are completely not able to facilitate the request of his...
Didami buddhi yogam tam. Krishna is there in his heart, he gives some intelligence. What would you do? Tell Jivasam when he get lost? You get a double curse. Yeah, Krishna arranged the pastime. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he did what was necessary under the circumstance. Exactly why, whether Krishna, obviously Krishna is a pure devotee, so he's an instrument for Krishna. So Krishna arranged it. Whether he saw Krishna around the corner or something, I don't know. That's not explained, but that's what the pastime was. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Gaur Vrindavan Prabhu used to say that every ISKCON devotee is supposed to is qualified. How did he say it exactly? Is supposed to give blessings.
Who said
is
that?
Gopi Purananda Prabhu. He's authorized to authorized to give blessings. I think he said first initiated, if I remember correct. He's authorized to give blessings. It was like half humorous, but
blessings to whom?
To whoever is asking.
What kind of blessings?
That's a preamble. I haven't started.
Okay.
Because you mentioned praying and getting desires fulfilled. So actually that was part of my question, that if somebody is asking for blessings from us, how are we supposed to respond? On one hand, we want to be generous and liberal and wish the best to everybody, especially to practicing devotees. On the other hand, oftentimes we think it looks very proud and puffed up if we are offering any blessings. What's the proper...
Well, it depends what kind of blessings you're asking for.
Like the taste for the holy name, or distribute books, many books, or advance in Krishna, something even good in Krishna consciousness.
Well, they're asking something good in Krishna consciousness and they want your blessings. Why not give it to them? And if they do anything good, then you say, well, I get half the credit for them. Come back and tell me. That's right. Tell me what happened and see if my blessings had any potency. I'm interested in finding out. Because we're not the doer, so if something good happens, we give the credit to Krishna, but we'll... It's a good test to see if how much we're empowered.
Yeah.
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Kind of Raj Bhagavad Gita Kita.